That this land has been continuously settled for 65,000 years is now so fundamental to our notion of Australia that it's shocking to find archaeologists have actually been disputing the claim ever since it was first made, nearly a decade ago, after the excavation of the Madjedbebe rock shelter in Arnhem Land. Scholars in America argue, for a number of reasons, that the first peoples arrived here long after that. Now, addressing this rumbling dispute is one of the reasons Peter Veth, a laureate professor at the University of Western Australia, is leading a big Australian Research Council project to systematically document, for the first time, ancient cultural sites in our deserts. Peter, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you, David.
Now, okay, let's get the ancestral story straight. Firstly, that rock shelter in Arnhem Land. What was found there that gave this extraordinary 65,000 figure?
It's an amazing site that's actually been worked on with traditional owners and archaeologists since the 1970s. So there have been three teams working on a very large open area with very rich rock art draped over the back of the site. And they've recorded and recovered literally tens and thousands of stone artifacts, including axes, grinding material, ochres used for ornamentation, plant processing material, and it went down metres and metres and metres. It is one of the most extraordinary sites that if you are going to have a window into some of the first settling of Northern Australia or Sahul, that's one of the places you'd look.
And that is the oldest settled site that's been found in Australia?
It is. It's currently at 65,000, give or take. There's always errors with these dating ranges, and sites have very complex ways of forming through thousands of years, as you can imagine. But the researchers for the last 10 years have assiduously argued that their dating range, conservatively no less than 55, 60 and possibly as much as 70, 75, should stand intact. And they've counted off at least two or three very, very serious heavy-duty critiques that have basically tried to cap it at 50,000 years, what we call the short chronologists.
Now, how? Why?
Well, there's an interesting global thing. Obviously, we have colleagues in the US and elsewhere in both the Northern Hemisphere and the South, and there's been a big contest in the US about how long Native American people have been in that continent. And it was capped at about 12,000 years for probably about 40 or 50 years until more and more sites were discovered, albeit at very great depth and complex to recover there because things accumulate more quickly in those sort of latitudes. And the dates have pushed back very conservatively to 15,000 and possibly as early as 23 to 26,000. So there are dates in Southern America, so at the end of the elevated when people would have been coming through the Beringian Straits down through the US and into South America. And these dates have sat there for about 10 to 15 years. And yet there is still a very, very solid, as we call them, a nickname of the Clovis Police, who want to see the first culture starting with this Clovis technology at only about 12 to 13,000 years ago. And we think that's flawed. And to some extent, that sentiment of being hypercritical about ages and context, but also in trying to create these short chronologies and in trying to, in a sense, raise the spectre of a human revolution, an upper Paleolithic revolution. For the Australian situation, it is when complex rock art starts. It's when people make axes. It's when a whole range of modern things happen. In Europe, Southeast Asia, Australia, it happens globally. It's a package. And yet that's not what the evidence and the actual archaeology tells us from Australia or indeed Southeast Asia now. But there have been just a couple of recent genetics papers which give a clock, a timing, to when modern people like all of us out of Africa had contact with Denisovans, archaic humans coming through Europe, Germany, and then later on, or Neanderthals, I should say, and then Denisovans at the eastern end of the corridor coming into Northern Australia. And that has been used as a way of creating this artificially, I think, short chronology.
Do I understand this, that the critics of the 65,000 years are saying the people who are here now must have come later and that there is some genetic reason for this that you're pushing back on?
They're saying that this timing for Neanderthal and Denisovan integrations or mixtures in Europe and Asia provides a clock that says it can only be 50,000 years. And if this site of Mudger Baby is correct, then these must be earlier groups. These must be a different wave of settlement and colonisation before that Neanderthal mixing or admixture or breeding happened.
So a people that died out.
Well, effectively, that's one of the only conclusions you could make. And it's a potentially egregious lens, and ones which people have spent many decades now trying to stamp out for Northern Australia and other areas, suggesting there's a pre-Aboriginal occupancy. And that's not something I believe in. And it's not just a theoretical philosophical position or a moral one. It's because I actually look at the archaeology in detail over many, many sites with colleagues across the continent, and also listen to people's traditional owners' origin narrative saying they have always been on country and they are descendants. And so I go back to look critically at the archaeology and say the timing that they have calculated for these mixing events in Europe and Asia must be too short, or something else is at play.
Right.
But as an archaeologist, I don't accept it.
Hey, this is something I've never really been clear about ever since I was a kid and been curious about. How did people reach this continent?
Mm.
What routes did they follow? Who were they?
Well, it's a fact that there have been sea gaps between Sunda, East and Southern Asia, if you like, the islands, Wallacean Islands, that have been not connected to that landmass to our west. And
so you couldn't walk.
Greater Australia. No.
You couldn't walk from,
No, no matter what sea levels were doing for many millions of years, it was impossible to walk from Australia, New Guinea, across to Asia. And this is why we get, as Wallace and Darwin both observed, this loss of animals across this divide. So by the time we come to Australia, there's a completely unique fauna. And the islands in between, the Wallacean Islands, the Wallacean Islands, including East Timor, Lombok, Bali, and so forth, basically start with really rich faunas out to the west. And so you've got rhinos and tigers and all sorts of things. And then we gradually get down to bats and snakes and a fairly depauperate fauna by the time you're in the east of the archipelago. And then by the time we're in Australia, it's a completely unique fauna that's evolved quite independently. But the bottom line is that people who settled Australia did it by making at least five, possibly more, water crossings. And some of those could have been up to 100 kilometres in length. So you would not have been able to see land in the distance. Boat people.
Boat people from the start.
Yep.
On ABC Radio National. This is Late Night Live, and I'm talking to Peter Veth about the continuing controversy over the age of the first Australians, the arrival of the first Australians. What are you finding in these desert sites? Are you able to date the use of these sites?
We are, and I've gone back to areas that I started working on when I was quite young, on the Canning Stock Route, remote areas of the Western Desert. In fact, a huge transect from Ningaloo through the Pilbara uplands and into the great sandy deserts, and in fact, as far north as Bidjidanga, almost up to Broome. And by looking at this huge tranche of landscapes and by focusing on really good preservation in rock shelters, caves, but also out in the open. So we're excavating open sites. We're using a broad range of dating techniques, radiocarbon, luminescence dating, and many others. And by having a really, really skilled team and by really hyper-focused traditional custodian groups, we've focused on sites that matter to them and sites that we can get older ages from. And by going back to these and spending years returning to do meticulous excavation, using incredibly careful removals, we're now down to metres and metres of depth in some of these sites, and we're getting ages of 45, 49, 50,000. One site actually is sitting somewhere between 45 and 70,000, but we have to do much further work to disentangle where occupation first starts. But I think the take-home message from our work on these, you know, beautiful marine desert areas like Ningaloo through the Pilbara, the banded iron formation gorges with water out into the linear dune fields and deserts, is that there's a 50,000 year record. And that's also found right across to Southeast Australia now in Lake Mungo, Willandra Lakes. So that's on the edge of the desert, on the north of the Flinders Ranges, 50,000 year old dates. And we're getting them potentially pre-50 right out in the Canning Stock Route at a spectacular area known as the Carnarvon Ranges, where we've just gone back to do luminescence dating for the first time. And if we have this complete continental record from Barrow Island in the northwest to Lake Mungo in the southeast of 50,000 years, how can that be the time that people actually met and bred and interacted with Neanderthals in Europe, let alone coming down with Denisovans in Asia at whatever time that was to come to Australia? So the take-home message here is if we're getting 50,000 plus dates from across the deserts, then that doesn't make the age ranges of Macho Baby and possibly some other sites about to come out that unusual or challengeable. And in fact, you might remember just a month ago, there was that spectacular result of the world's oldest rock art from Borneo. And there it's been dated to 67,000 years ago. And that Borneo and Sulawesi art, often in addition to handprints, hand stencils, has animals in side profile, narrative scenes, hunting scenes, therianthropes, half fictional animals, half people hunting together at 48,000 years ago. So how these have to be modern behaviours. This is what we are as modern peoples, the Aboriginal ancestors here, the ancestors of Borneo and Sulawesi, almost certainly are related to the groups that settled here. And that those dates are there now at 67,000. So how and why would they be doing that if there's this later genetic admixture?
If they didn't start out from Europe until about then. Peter, what is it that you actually date? I mean, are you carbon dating? I mean, are you talking about burnt sticks or bits of vegetable or what?
Well, we have such different preservation. So in some areas like this unbelievable site on the Canning Stock Route, we've got charcoal of trees, like beautiful fragrant colitis pine burnt down into charcoal lumps. And we can tell what species it is by using scanning electron microscopes. We can date it and we can do a reconstruction of what people were using on the landscape. So that's charcoal, that's a hearth. In other areas, the preservation is not good for organics. So we have to date the sediments like quartz and feldspar that artifacts are lying in, and we can actually tell the last time those sand grains saw light before they were buried. And as they lie in situ, they become irradiated by the natural radiation of earth deposits and rocks. And once those are taken out in the dark and reactivated in the lab, a whole range of calculations and dose rates can be made, and they're actually quite accurate. So this is how we're pushing the ages beyond the radiocarbon barrier. We've had desert dates now for 10 years of around 50,000 years, but that's as old as radiocarbon will go. It loses interest after that.
Right, right.
But there are these other techniques, there's a few, but optical stimulated luminescence and single grain dating, believe it or not, they separate out individual sand grains, take batches of tens and hundreds of these and work out statistical behaviours in terms of when they were last excited and saw sunlight, and then work out whether the site is disturbed or relatively high integrity or very, very high integrity, and then actually generate real ages. And they can be cross-compared with the radiocarbon ages as you go higher up in the site and why there might be better preservation. And that's exactly what we do.
How can you date a painting?
Oh, well, that's, it's a very good question. It's really hard. So I've done it with colleagues from the US and from Centre for Rock Art Research here, Joe McDonald and others in the desert. And sometimes you can take incredibly small particles of organics and charcoals next to a painting which are bound into it and just use basically a high-end radiocarbon technique. The way the researchers from Griffith University have dated the choroidal formations, which is like a carbonate drape and little bobbles, if you like, that form over the pigment art, is to use a technique called uranium thorium. And there they're basically doing microstratigraphy and working out the decay signatures of these compositions through tens of thousands of years. So in a sense, they're doing like mini excavations in these mineral crusts on top of the pigment. And then a third way, which colleagues have done in the Kimberley, and I've been part of that work, is to find mud wasp nests. So these are little
wasp nests.
They're wasps. Wasps pick up mud when it's a bit wet, and they love building little nests. You probably had them on the house and had to knock them off occasionally. And they'll put them on rock surfaces. They get worn back. People come along and paint on top of them. Then the wasps will come back and build a little nest on top of that painting, and then that might get worn away. And you end up with this delicious chocolate cake stratigraphy of wasp nests and pigment. And these have been dated now to conservatively, the Guion figures, those incredible human figures with the headdresses in the Kimberley, to around 12,000 years ago. And there are tens of thousands of these sites sitting out in the semi-open. That's how well preserved they are, but there are, in fact, older dates coming back. And that, large animals, 17,000 and older.
And that brings us to the conclusion of this brief debate, Peter. And my question to you is, can we therefore confidently and with pride continue to assert that this has been a continuously occupied continent for 65,000 years?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. That's what we need. Thank you. Peter, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
No worries, David. It was fun. Thanks. Thanks heaps.
I've been talking to Peter Veth, who is a Laureate Professor of Archaeology at the University of Western Australia, who is leading this big team of researchers into the ancient desert people of this nation. And Peter's giving a lecture on this at Melbourne University, Rethinking the First Settlement of Sahul, that is, of course, the original continent of this country when it still spread north and west, What Australia's Deserts Reveal, which we hope, Peter, will be available online at some point.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We'll let our listeners know. Thanks very much.
Cheers.